This podcast recording is from a previously recorded DecisionWise webinar. To view the webinar in its entirety, visit decisionwise.com or DecisionWise on YouTube.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this DecisionWise presentation on the 2023 Employee Experience Predictions. My name is Charles Rogel. I'm the Vice President of Consulting Services here, and I'm joined today by our COO, Dave Long.
Hi, everybody.
We're going to have some fun today. We've got a lot of data and slides to share. We'll move relatively quickly. So let me just jump in and share our agenda really quickly. We have a lot of topics we want to cover. So we'll go through some of these current economic trends. Everything's kind of up in the air right now. We've got some data to show around those. But then we'll get into this theme or this agenda around all of these different topics here and what we're kind of seeing, what some predictions are, trends that we're seeing. And we'd love to kind of bounce again those ideas off of you and get your reaction. So please participate in the chat if you have something to share, especially if you want to disagree with Dave. I want to hear those things as well. You know, our clients have come to us and said, hey, what do you see going on in the industry in terms of the pandemic and thereafter? And so what we've been tracking are kind of those topics that clients have asked us to measure within their organization. So we're an employee survey company. We start off a project with the client and say, hey, what are you interested in measuring? We've got our standard set of questions. What else is a concern? These are the concerns that kind of popped up over the years. And no surprise, in 2020 during the pandemic, people were concerned about safety, diversity, equity, and inclusion, communication, productivity, collaboration. So those were hot topics that we began measuring more in detail. We got some good benchmarks that we'll show on these topics as we move forward. 2021 was kind of the year of getting back to the office, kind of emerging from the pandemic. We wanted to see if we could kind of get people back to hybrid working situations. So working from home was a big topic in terms of how do we navigate that and implement policies. But also workload increased. The great, you know, resignation or retention was a topic too. How do we keep our employees? Still diversity, equity, and inclusion, but then culture kind of emerged because people were wondering what happened to their culture during the pandemic as we were working from home and somewhat separated. Last year, it was interesting. Flexibility and work-life balance were really some of the top concerns that we saw rise to the top here for employees. And so they were very concerned about how many days they're working in the office, not kind of giving up some of the freedoms that they had during the pandemic in terms of working from home. Those things also influence retention. So people with better policies around flexibility tended to be able to recruit better and retain people more than other organizations. So we're measuring a lot of things around that too. DEI kind of merged with culture, and we'll show you some data there that we collected on these topics. Workload was still a big concern. Mental health somewhat emerged, but didn't get too much traction as a topic in 2022, but it's still somewhat of a concern that we were paying attention to. And now to reveal what we're expecting in 2023, work-life balance, the letters kind of switch a bit. So to employees, it's life-work balance, where there's more of an emphasis on what I'm doing with my life, work not being such a big priority. So reprioritizing your life around work as a topic. Compensation with inflation and the competitiveness in wages right now is a top concern. Again, culture and DEIB, B for belonging in this case, and workload and retention. So slight change in order to some of these topics. Dave, anything you want to add here?
Yeah, 2022 retention, I think that goes down the list a little bit just because of economic concerns. And you might add to 2023, it's not really as much of an employee experience trend, but I would say that organizations are concerned about the economy, and even concern over the economy can impact potential layoffs and things like that that might be happening in your organization. That's something that's certainly a concern and certainly something that I would add to the equation. But retention continues to be a concern for a lot of organizations. I think in 2022 and 2021, we had something like 15 or 16 or 17 of the highest turnover months in the history of the United States. And it was by a long margin that some of those months were some of the highest turnover, employee turnover months in history. And so that, even though it may slow down a little bit in 2023, I would say that's still going to be a major issue. A lot of the organizations that we work with are still dealing with vacancy rates of 10, 15, even 20%, where they're still looking for people to fill positions.
Good points. All right. So we wanted to set this up with some of the economic trends that are impacting kind of the workforce and what we're seeing there. Dave, I'm going to rely on you as the finance expert, having a background here. Do you want to talk about what we're seeing in the markets?
Yeah, I mean, and this is just to kind of give us a general idea. I think if we look at the, kind of the macro environment, maybe some of your organizations are experiencing something similar. I think if you actually look at this, and this is obviously a long time horizon that we're looking at the Dow and the S&P, but if you look over at the last year, we've already seen kind of a pullback in the economy, and we see that in really the stock market and the value of stocks going down. Oftentimes, stock markets can be predictive of what's happening in the future. Of late, actually, that we've seen a few days that have been, or a few weeks, where we've rallied a little bit and actually come back from where we were kind of toward the end of fall, early winter of this last year. So it's really interesting to kind of see that and see kind of, it's a little bit, the economy has a little bit of a multi-personality or multiple personalities going on right now. We're not really sure where it's going. I think there's a lot of concern over what is inflation done to the economy? What's that going to do? Rising interest rates, the lack of availability of money for organizations to go access and to be able to grow and to expand workforce and things like that. And you've seen certainly some of that with, it seems like every day in the news, there are additional layoffs that are being announced, which are obviously have a major impact on employee experience. And so, you know, I think the reason why we show this is to show you, okay, we've experienced already some pullback in the economy, but I don't think we've gone to any major troughs like we did in 2008 after the subprime lending crisis that we experienced. Mm-hmm. And even in 2020, right after the pandemic hit, we had this huge trough that was only like 2 or 3 months long before we were able to rally and come back from that. We haven't seen anything major like that yet. Obviously, we've had a few months and even quarters of the stock market being down. But what the question is, and what the questions that your organizations are going to be answer is what are going to try to answer is what's going to happen from here. I mean, they're going to obviously make preparations with their workforce based on what they predict.
Yeah, and that kind of takes us to a couple other, you know, topics that we're seeing. So in the labor market, it's still strong. So it powers ahead. Wage growth kind of loses steam. So we saw wages increase as people were changing jobs and taking better offers. But we saw an increase in December. The unemployment rate even fell a little bit more. You know, labor force rises. You know, so we're kind of at a real, still in a real tight job market in terms of available employees. Hourly earnings up slightly, 4%, 4.6% year on year, contrasting that with inflation. So we've got all this inflation going on that's still, you know, hurting people. It declined a bit. So have we hit the peak and now we're going down, but we're still, you know, paying a lot more for stuff. So this is a big concern for employees, workers. So how am I going to afford, you know, my lifestyle or just afford to survive in a lot of cases? So these are kind of the two major factors people are thinking about. And then a couple other pieces. Dave, what's up with all these corporate profits now? You know, looking for some data, we're hearing in the news a lot that there's record corporate profits in light of the inflation. And the question is, well, are profits, like are corporate gains now causing inflation? Is there greediness out there that's causing this inflation? Or is it an outcome of inflation that profits are increasing?
Yeah, and things like this, I always wonder about. But yeah, I think with inflation, obviously, the amount of money that you capture as an organization is going to increase as the prices of your goods and services increase, especially if you have not increased wages commensurate with what you're capturing in terms of revenue and profits. So yeah, it is interesting to see the bottom line increasing over time, even as we have some recession fears ahead.
And then just to reiterate in terms of what we're seeing around unemployment. So we said before, 3.5% is what we're sitting at recently. Looking at the number of unemployed people per job opening, it's really low, 0.6. So basically for every unemployed person, there's almost two job openings for that individual. And so again, yeah, we're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel essentially to find workers to fill positions, poaching from other organizations. It's really competitive out there. Definitely an employees market. But then we get news of all these layoffs going on. And so you can see in the tech industry, especially, and I grabbed these screenshots a few days ago, last year, 125,000 employees lost their jobs. We're hearing an announcement from Alphabet or Google today, about 11,000 more. So that trend is still happening. There's some popularity. I shouldn't say popularity. There's some definite layoffs occurring in some organizations. I'm curious if that's also happening, if you're all seeing that in your organizations. And then another piece, what do we make of all this? So a couple insights or predictions and trends that we're seeing. So again, pool of talent is small. Back in 2022, most organizations were basically taking who they could get, right? So with a small pool of talent, you're hiring a lot of people. Maybe you're not being as selective as you were before. I know my wife, who works in the construction industry in HR, they're basically hiring anyone that can pass a drug test and give them a chance to work in the organization, see if they pan out. So the trend, what we're suspecting or predicting a bit, is that some organizations are kind of jumping on this bandwagon of layoffs just to kind of reduce some of the bloat that they might have in their workforce. So maybe a lot of underperformers were kind of hired. You know, we were somewhat lax in our hiring practices. We hired some people that just aren't working out. And so we're going to do some layoffs just to kind of reduce and maybe tighten up a bit.
And also, in addition to that, Charles, when other organizations and major organizations and news-making organizations start doing layoffs, it becomes a little more, and I'll just use the word socially acceptable.
Right.
If you were thinking about right-sizing, or if you were thinking about, hey, we've hired a whole bunch of people that weren't really qualified for the jobs. We needed people that could fill those positions, but they weren't really qualified for those jobs, then we can do it. One of the reasons why I know that has been the case in some cases, I know in some cases organizations are laying off mostly from their sales and marketing group. Sales people, marketing, marketers, very hard to come by over the last couple of years. And you know that those organizations are going to hire to replace their sales force. They're not just going to go without salespeople. And so it may just be a move to sort of try to upgrade talent in their sales organizations. But I know that's not every organization, but I know at least some of them would be looking to see, hey, can we remove some of the talent we've acquired over the last couple of years that was maybe suboptimal in order to do it? And I know that sounds horrible. That sounds awful, but I think that might be the reality.
No, it's true, because you don't want to look bad, right? You don't want to be that the only company doing layoffs, because that indicates that you're not as strong maybe as you suspected. But yeah, so kind of maybe a cleaning house exercise. Wait and see mode. So now, you know, CEOs are trying to make these decisions. Are we going to be conservative, or are we going to kind of still restock the people that we need because, you know, we're trying to increase productivity? So I'm curious, again, in the chat, I'll ask for those of you, are you seeing a freeze right now? Are you still hiring? I'm trying to get a feel for what others are kind of doing or how we're playing this out right now.
Yeah, I'd love to just put it in the chat if you can. If you're actively hiring, I'm curious about that. If you're in a freeze, or if you're looking at a layoff or have done a layoff, that would be great to know.
Yeah, and then, you know, day to day, we're kind of seeing this, hey, is this recession going to hit us or what? Or has it hit us? You know, is it occurring, you know, in certain industries or areas? You know, we know, for example, in real estate, there's a downturn. But yeah, is this going to be, how big is this going to be? Is it a big tsunami or just a few waves that we're seeing? Now we're seeing actively hiring.
The three that have posted so far are all actively hiring. Four now.
Yeah.
Five, six. Wow. So there you go. I think we did this. Now, Charles, you did this webinar a month ago and asked a similar question. And we had a number of people that were in the middle of layoffs. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Looks like we've got a couple of them right now. Seasonal business that is maybe looking to reduce a little bit. We've had one organization that has done layoffs, but actively hiring again in other areas, maybe reducing one part of the organization in order to build somewhere else. I have somebody on a hiring freeze. Really interesting. A lot of people actively hiring. I think that's been true with a lot of the organizations I've been working with as well.
Yeah. And so the good news for organizations is that workers, if they're seeing a little bit of uncertainty in the market, they're going to settle down, right? They're less likely to kind of leave and jump ship, because they know if they join an organization and layoffs occur, they'll probably be the first to be let go. And so this makes people a little bit more conservative. They ride it out. They're going to wait until they're a little bit more confident. So we'll see if that occurs as we go forward. That's one of our predictions. But Dave, what's your opinion? If, you know, when layoffs occur, what does that do to the employee experience?
Yeah, I don't think maybe in just a few instances, I've actually seen where layoffs have been a positive impact on employee experience. Most of the time, I think the biggest impact that it has is confidence in the future. Confidence in the future is such a huge indicator of whether or not somebody is going to want to stay with that organization long term. When you have a layoff, you know, in some cases, I suppose it can be done very well. But when you have a layoff, then it immediately gets people thinking about their own future. And am I secure here? Do I feel like the organization is ultimately going to show me loyalty in the long term? And no matter how kind you are in doing it and things like that, people always have those concerns. And that's a huge impact on their engagement, but it's a major impact on their willingness to stay with an organization.
Yeah. And sometimes there's a little blip of a secondary kind of exit from people. They see a layoff. Those that are kind of afraid of what the future might be take off as well.
Well, it's interesting because you do see organizations that do a layoff because they're just trying to trim lower performers. And, and what we found is it's best to kind of trim your lower performers along the way rather than trying to do it in a major event that is a layoff, that's a news-making layoff event, to that sort of thing. It's better to kind of, if you need to remove low performers or underperformers from positions, to kind of do it as that is happening. And of course, you as HR people rely upon managers to really carry the burden to make sure that they are managing up or out. But that can be a very challenging thing.
Yeah, that comes back to bite HR a lot. And then if people are, you know, kind of hunkering down, that will create some bottled up turnover that will happen once those fears end. So if people kind of sense that the economy is doing better, they might leave a little quicker.
And Charles, I don't know why it would be. I think we've maybe just entered into a new phase of the working world where I don't know why it would be any different than what we experienced in 2021 and 2022, where people were job hopping pretty quickly. I think people will continue to be will continue to just kind of move on quickly if they're not satisfied with where they are.
That loyalty threshold's really gone down. It seems people are really more seeing that, hey, it makes sense to move more than to stay. Mm-hmm. All right. So here we want to touch base on benchmarks. We're in the business of measuring engagement. We also look at satisfaction. We kind of break out these two components. We'll look at these two topics here in more detail to give you kind of a sense for what we're seeing in these trends around satisfaction engagement. We typically say satisfaction elements like pay and benefit and workload help drive retention. So people tend to stay longer. They don't necessarily drive engagement. In fact, usually that you want these things to be on par with people's expectations, and then they can engage and think about the higher level needs that they have, which really drive performance. And that ties into our magic model, where these typical magic elements or factors are drivers for engagement. We see this time and time again as we run driver analysis, that if people have more growth opportunities or experience more meaning, they'll be more engaged in their work. So we're going to touch base on some of these things. Overall, in our data for, you know, the last 4 years, our rolling benchmark includes, you know, all the data we collected from over 400 companies. And looking at the breakouts here, we see about 78% of the population is engaged in their work. Now, generally, we're asking five anchor questions to get a bead on people's motivation and engagement. And if they're saying strongly agree to those statements or agree, this is how we get them in this or classify them as engaged overall. Here are the trends, though. So as we look at this, you know, generally it's pretty stable. You know, as 2019, perceptions were lower or engagement was lower, 76%. It bumped in 2020, dipped a little in 2021 and held its own in 2022 for an overall average of 78% as we look at our rolling benchmark. Dave, what do you predict for 2023?
Yeah, I predict more of the same. I think, you know, this is one of our more stable benchmarks that we have. Interestingly, I think Gallup has had a study that came out recently about engagement numbers going down. And I think that's just because they don't help their clients as much as we do. What do you think, Charles?
Yeah, agreed.
Just kidding. But they, you know, they have a different measure for engagement. They have a higher standard where they say, you know, like 20% of the workforce is engaged. But for us, and I think what they're saying is fully engaged, and our fully engaged number is around 28%. And that stays pretty consistent over time. I would expect that would continue to stay consistent. We had a question that I just want to answer really quickly. Courtney asked, what does the MAGIC acronym stand for? Meaning, just really quickly, I'll run through them. Meaning, you have some level of purpose in your work, that your work means something to you personally. Autonomy, you feel trusted by the organization, by your manager, by your team to kind of handle your work in a way that you feel like it should be done. Growth, that you feel like you're making progress personally, professionally, in your career on a day-to-day basis and over time, impact, that you feel valued for the contribution that you're making in the organization, that you feel like the work that you're doing makes a difference. And then connection is this really important one that is absolutely essential. And another word that we use for that sometimes is belonging. And essentially the feeling that I belong here in this organization has a massive impact on whether or not you feel like you're going to engage and stay long-term with that organization.
Yeah, and this came from our data over the past 25 years as we were running kind of multiple regression analysis to say, what are the drivers of engagement that we see constantly appear? Now, the words we massaged a bit, so meaning and purpose, we chose meaning so we could get kind of the magic acronym to appear. But it's an easy way to remember that these are the general drivers that typically impact engagement for individuals.
We use these on all of our surveys. We measure all of those things on all of our surveys because different organizations will be different. So some organizations will be a little more purpose-driven and others will be belonging-driven and some will be growth-driven and impact. And it just depends on the organization where that deeper motivation is coming from. And so we cast a wide net with all of these drivers and usually two or three of these will come back as some of the key drivers of engagement in those organizations. In most organizations.
Yeah, keep the questions coming. So let's transition to talk about attrition. We did a couple analyses in the past couple of years to look at what are the reasons why people are leaving organizations. So one of these is kind of backfilling data into an employee survey. So if we run an employee survey for a company, we say, hey, 6 months later, send us a list of people that left the organization. We'll break it out as a demographic in your results, and we'll see if there's any leading indicators about why they decided to leave. So were their perceptions lower, and then they finally left the organization 3 or 6 months later overall? So we did this with 28 organizations. Here's some of the findings or the results that we found. So what this is showing is the yellow bar here indicates those that voluntarily left the organization, and the green bar indicates those that remained. And when we look at the greatest differences between agreement, we say percent favorable, agree or strongly agree responses between these two groups, these questions show the biggest differences. So my job is fulfilling and challenging. 38% of those that left the organization agreed with that statement, compared to 77% of those that stayed. So if you felt your job wasn't fulfilling and challenging, you are more likely to leave. Here's that belonging question Dave mentioned. Only 53% of the population agreed with that compared to 80% of those that stayed. Now we've underlined a few that highlight this topic of growth, advancement, fulfilling work. So you can see there's like 3 or 4 items tied to that type of perception that are different between those that are leaving the organization compared to those that stay. You'll notice we don't ask a lot about benefits or pay in our employee surveys. We're not seeing that kind of show up on this list of statements, but this kind of calls out, growth advancement is a topic that's different for those that leave. A lot of people say, well, what about the supervisor? People don't leave bad companies, they leave bad supervisors or managers. Well, there was a difference. And you can see the growth question that we ask about supervisor interaction had the biggest difference overall. But there's also some differences, less agreement from those that left the organization about their manager, their supervisor, than those that stayed. But it was interesting to see there's bigger differences on some of those other topics. And then transitioning here, we also looked at our exit survey data. So, a lot of our clients use different questions on their exit surveys. Here we found the most commonly used questions from 15 organizations that we got some good data on. The first one that shows up, again, advancing my career. So career advancement, growth, all these other things, less agreement, only 33% agreement on that statement compared to some of these other ones that were asked when they left the organization.
One of the things I think is mentioned here that I think we've seen as a trend over the last little while is that people have left jobs. Since we've been doing exit surveys for the last few years, we've noticed that career advancement is the number one reason why people leave jobs. But one that's kind of shown up a lot recently has been the level of stress in my job is manageable. And you can see that people are, and I think understaffed organizations have led to stressed out employees, which has then complicated the problem of being understaffed because those employees leave for other jobs. So it's definitely been a factor.
We also have another index that we use. We're trying to understand the satisfaction component here. We talked about engagement already. So we use another subset of questions to measure the level of commitment that people have to stay within the organization. And here we're seeing, we do a similar exercise. If you're agreeing more with those statements, you're more committed. We see 74% on average as we're looking at our global benchmarks. And then 18% who are more neutral and 8% who are kind of disagreeing with those statements and have a higher potential to leave. So here's some more data. As we look at those that are undecided, so those that are saying more, you know, responding more neutrally to those other statements, here are the things that they're disagreeing with the most. And so of these 18% in the database that were undecided, 36% of them disagreed, said strongly disagree or disagreed to working effectively across departments and functions. 35% disagreed on this communication question and senior leaders knowing what's going on. What I'm pointing out here, advancement and professional growth show up here as well. So again, it makes the list in terms of the most disagreed with statements from these folks. These are the things that are we call detractors or maybe the topics that are bothering people. If we look at this 8% that are disagreeing with these, you know, intent to stay questions, are also disagreeing heavily with these other same statements. So professional growth and advancement, 68% of this small population is disagreeing with these statements. So again, reinforcing professional growth, advancement shows up in multiple areas as we touch on these topics.
I think we should mention too that we've seen this now a number of times in the data that you showed before of the employees who left the organization within 6 months and now here again. If I feel like I have a voice in an organization, that goes a long way to me feeling like I want to stay there and I feel like I belong here and will engage here as well. So that top one about having a voice or just feeling like my input is valued.
Yeah. And that one also kind of influences how much I feel cared about.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you touched on workload, Dave, earlier, you know, as some of the reasons why people leave. If we look at this undecided group again, that are undecided about staying, these are the questions that we typically ask about workload on a survey. And you can see that these folks also are agreeing less with these statements. So the blue bars are essentially the agree and strongly agree responses. Gray is neutral and the red is the disagree and strongly disagree. And again, you know, it's kind of split, you know, a third or a fourth are kind of agreeing with some of these statements, but we've got a third to, you know, either neutral or disagreeing on these items too. So yeah, these are other factors that are kind of contributing to their less likelihood of staying. And then one other piece of data, you know, we've been tracking the trends on these questions. These are kind of our intent to stay questions. If people feel like, you know, the organization has a successful future, they'd recommend it's a great place to work. And finally, if I would choose to remain, despite, you know, if everything else was even, a slight decrease in 2022 on some of these statements. And so we have seen kind of this intent to stay suffer a bit when we're looking at some of these trends in our data. And so the big question is, will that continue? Will that improve? We sense it might improve a bit if people have, you know, if the economy kind of cools. If we say, you know, summarizing what we've been talking about, these retention factors, growth and advancement always showing up in our data, but compensation is rising on the list. And we're seeing this play out. Again, we don't ask this question directly on a lot of surveys because we don't want to set the expectation that we're going to change something about compensation, but it does show up in the open-ended comments. People mention pay, wages, whatever, as a concern or something that could be improved. So that is rising on the list. And then, of course, we've got workload. We're going to show you a bunch of data here on remote work opportunities too, and market optimism, like we said before. Anything else you'd add here, Dave?
No, I don't think so. Maybe just something from our discussion about the intent to stay questions. The other thing is your intent to stay index may decrease a little bit. If you're running a survey with an intent to stay question, it could decrease even as you're not seeing turnover. But that could be a sign that as soon as people feel better about the economy, they're going to leave your organization. So it's something to pay attention to, even if you're not experiencing turnover at the moment. Just pay attention to that, because as that decreases, as soon as people feel good about opportunities out there, they will leave. And all of a sudden, you'll see a big clip of turnover.
Good point. All right, so work-life balance. We've got some interesting data here to show for this. You know, obviously during the pandemic, this preference for what we're now kind of labeling life-work balance has increased. Really interesting study done by McKinsey. Really big data set. 25,000 people they polled in the spring of 2022 about their remote work opportunities. And what was interesting is that, you know, 42% of those that responded not offered remote work. Now, that's a mix of a lot of people that have to be whatever on the manufacturing floor or out in the field or whatever. Their job, you know, doesn't allow them to kind of work from home. But 23% were offered remote work part-time and 35% full-time remote work. That's much higher than I expected to see overall.
I'm curious if people could put into the chat what their breakout is, how maybe percentage of people that are offered the remote work in your organization versus those who need to be on location or in the office at your in your organizations. We have one already that says they're fully remote.
Yeah, and thinking of the clients I've worked with this past year, about 70 or so that we've done employee surveys with, very few, I might say a handful, are fully remote. You know, basically, if like they've reduced their office space dramatically, everyone can work remote. But again, it really lends itself to more of a white collar position, maybe in the tech industry where you can do so. Others with manufacturing, of course, some of their departments are fully remote, but not the whole organization. Hybrids, fully remote. Next slide I thought was really interesting. Okay, so basically wanted to state 58% can work remote. Again, that's much higher than I expected. Now, I think that numbers, we'll get to this, but I think that number is going to shrink a bit or maybe get squeezed a bit as a result of maybe a cooling of the economy. But separately, what was asked here is, if you're offered to work remote, what's your preference? And so again, we're taking that 58% that we saw before and saying, well, what is your preference? Not what you're actually getting, but what's your preference? And you can see 32% are saying 5 days a week, you know. So again, not everyone wants to work from home all the time, but there's a, you know, a third of the population that does. And then it's very sporadic. So even 13% would prefer to be in the office full time, but there is a spectrum. And so just keep that in mind as you're working with people. Some people like coming to the office a few days a week. Others prefer full time remote.
Yeah, we're seeing a few more people with a little more nuanced. A bunch of you are fully remote still and may continue to do that, it seems like, but a number of them are hybrid. I think that's what I've been seeing for most of them is there's a lot of work. Most organizations, I think, have at least some people that are fully remote or at a minimum hybrid, but there's a number of organizations, I think, that are requiring people to come back to the office at least for part of the week to choose, and they can usually choose 2 or 3 days that they want to work in office. But we've seen a lot of hybrid work environments over the last, I'd say, 6 months to a year.
Yeah. You know, and this does vary a bit by occupation and or industry. And so I thought these findings were interesting where, you know, computer mathematical occupations, 52% reporting that they're remote, 37% part-time. Finance, I see finance departments still a lot remote now, engineering and so on. So again, more, you know, office type work can be done remote. Most tech workers, I'm seeing programmers working remote. In fact, it's almost an expectation I've seen in that for that type of occupation. And it's hard to hire talent if you're not. So those are really interesting. You know, production, protective service, obviously you've got to be on site to kind of fulfill a lot of those responsibilities. Sales is interesting. I expected that to be higher. Maybe this internal sales as opposed to outside sales. But, you know, your sales force, if you have an outside sales force, generally working remote around the country. And then what was also really interesting from this study, this is kind of the last point I wanted to highlight, is this flexible working relationship is kind of the third highest motivator for seeking a new job. So when they're asked, you know, what's your reason for seeking a new job? Well, we've got pay or hours, which is number one, which we're not typically measuring on our surveys a lot, but not surprised it shows up here. We've already talked about career opportunities, but flexible work, remote work, really climbing the list comparatively.
I don't think it would be anywhere close to that in 2019. I mean, we didn't really measure that right. much around flexible work prior to 2020. Yeah. But I don't think it was on people's mind as much as it is right now.
For sure. So keep that in mind, 21%. Again, it's not everyone, but that does factor into some of your positions, and you have to kind of factor in if that's a real important position too for your organization. So here's how we're tracking some of these work-life balance topics. You know, we ask these questions on our surveys frequently. We're seeing some decreases on some of these. So 71% agreement on the statement about the organization promoting a reasonable work-life balance compared to what we saw in 2021. Healthy balance, you know, amount of workload, stress. So some of this factors into being able to work remote, but also just the amount of work I have to do and staffing issues as well as the time. So slight decreases in 2022 compared to what we saw in previous years. And then here's what we hear from clients, especially in the comment sections of surveys. When people are talking about remote work and what, you know, we ask, what can we do to make this a better place to work? Well, fairness comes up and they're saying, hey, it's not fair that our policy isn't as good as the what I'm seeing in the industry. That's why I'm looking around. Or it's not implemented fairly within our company. Like different departments have more days off than us, or our manager insists on us being in the office more than other managers, which isn't cool. So fairness is a topic. And then also trust. And so people feel like, hey, you're taking stuff, something away from me. So this perk, this benefit we got is now being taken. So now you don't trust us to work from home. What changed? And then some companies are using or trying to track productivity using some monitoring tools. And that's, you know, making people feel like it's a big brother type organization and it undermines trust. The other topics, you know, so here's what kind of organizations are saying. Hey, we want people to work in the office because, you know, we have social needs. It's important for networking, innovation. And so the idea is, yeah, collaboration, culture, just, you know, what's the other topic here?
Yeah, whenever the organization says, and we've seen this happen a number of times, where organizations are asking their employees to return to the office, at least in a hybrid situation, the reasons they'll give to employees are going to be, well, you've got to fulfill social needs. You've got to, it's a better opportunity for you to be in the office and be networking. And also it improves innovation. There are other reasons why leaders might say to the organization, we're asking you to come back. But there are other reasons that they're not saying and they won't say. And if they are saying it, it's probably the wrong thing to say. But that is sort of the underlying reason why leaders are wanting people to come back. They are concerned about productivity when you're not in the office. There's some concern about moonlighting. You know, how much other work are people taking? How much, you know, are they doing contracting work on the side when they should be giving that productivity to my organization? Whether that's a legitimate worry or not, I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a worry, but it is something that we've heard. Availability, like when I need you or when I need to talk to a certain person that works here, am I going to be able to get a hold of that person? Is this person be able to respond in time to an email or a critical situation that's going on? And then professionalism. It's been, you know, a few years since we've had the experience of having Zoom calls or Teams calls like this one, where we see people that are, you know, kind of in their bedroom with a closet with shirts hanging up behind them and things like that. And the more we get away from that, the more there are concerns that, hey, whatever is in your background is kind of a, and whatever you're wearing and things like that matter a lot more than they did in 2020. And so they want, you know, to give the appearance of professionalism in those video calls that weren't happening in 2019, by the way. You would just hear somebody on the phone rather than seeing where they are and where they're sitting and what they're wearing, et cetera. But those are some of the things that even though there are reasons that they want people to come back in the office, they're not the ones that they're going to go out there and broadcast. They're going to say, oh, come back for the social aspect, for the networking, for the innovation, but for the collaboration, but not for these other aspects that they are still worried about.
I think one other item I'd add here, at least for employees, is advancement opportunities. You have a better chance for advancement if you're working in the office and meeting with, you know, leaders and that sort of thing. So that's something that comes up. Yeah. And to your point, Dave, I think there was also in 2020, this, you know, we were more forgiving or at least understanding of people working from home and hearing a dog or a kid screaming in the background. That's all cool. But now are we changing? Are we getting back to where, hey, you know, we need to, you know, sharpen up a bit? I don't know. That's unfolding. So a few trends, you know, pandemic, of course, proved we could work from home. That's why people are saying why we're so anxious to get back to the office. We talked about preferences varying for the number of days working in the office. You know, we used to have this perks war back in the day, especially in technology companies with cafeterias available and all these on-site kind of fun, you know, fun things, foosball tables, you know, they're all the cliches.
Now, how do we make it so employees want to stay here as long as they possibly can?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. In the office. Right.
Yeah. And let's give lunch and dinner and breakfast. Right.
Right. I'd give all that up for working remote. You know, if I don't have to commute, that's my thing. So that's, you know, that's become the highest priority. Events are important. So people do want to connect. And so when they come to the office, they want to be there for a reason. They don't want to kind of arrive to an empty office and sit in their cubicle alone. they're hoping that if we are getting in together, that it's an event where we connect, like a connection piece of engagement and network and do something productive. So we always say kind of build it around some kind of events. And I suspect, or we suspect, that organizations might take advantage of this downturn in the economy to get people in the office more. So we might see people trying to increase the number of days required to be in the office if we feel like we have an advantage now in terms of hiring. So that could be on, you know, the back burner. All right, so here's another concern we're seeing, you know, productivity, workforce productivity. Latest numbers show that it is dipping slightly. So it was pretty high. It was, and this was the surprising finding. Everyone started working from home during the pandemic. There were some layoffs, but output increased and stayed ahead of hours worked overall. So here we're seeing the blue bar dip below the hours worked. And so this is because of all those quiet quitters that are out there. No, I'm just kidding. But there is a real concern appearing around productivity. So what does that mean? Well, the concerns that we have as managers are around accountability, you know, especially working from home, output. How do we kind of monitor this, measure this? You know, we've added quiet quitters here and moonlighting again, availability. So all these things are kind of a concern, but really it's about good management. So we just have to learn how to manage better in this new environment if we have people working from home. We've been, you know, asking several different questions around these topics to kind of get a beat on this, to see if we feel like, you know, these things are working. And again, a lot of this depends on the person's direct manager, which takes us to what do we do with this, which is kind of this leadership impact and approach. Dave, do you want to touch on these items?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is, and this is for performance management, I would also put this into the category of engagement, to really boost engagement in your organization and boost the desire of people in your organization to stay. There's a huge leadership impact. And LDX that he put on the slide really represents what we call leader-driven experience. I think that this is going to become a bigger and bigger part as we continue to kind of build out what we're doing around employee experience. A lot more is going to depend upon the leaders in the organization. And that's from the very top of the organization to the day-to-day manager that you report to. One of the things that we have learned from our results, and we showed you some, what is the supervisor's impact on people leaving the organization? And it wasn't as big as some of the other issues like growth, like feeling valued for my opinion. Some of those issues are big. Now, what we've also found is who is primarily responsible for growth in an organization. If I were to do a poll of people in an organization, who do you think is most responsible for my own growth and advancement? And I gave three options. One was, are you the most responsible? Two was, is your manager the most responsible? And the third is the organization most responsible for my growth and development. Most of the individuals that work there would say, oh, it's my manager. The organization of managers would say, oh, it's the individual's primary responsibility for their own growth and development. And we just had a comment, individual is most responsible. I agree with that completely. And that's why when we look at the engagement, we say half of this is on the employee. What are you willing to put into the work? What are you willing to do it? But the other half is based on the circumstances that they're placed into. There are some people that will engage no matter what set of circumstances that surround them. They can have the worst job in the world and say, hey, this is the greatest job in the world. But there are other people that need, and people like me, and I think Charles, that need to have the conditions right for me to be able to choose or want to be engaged and invest in my career in an organization and things like that. And leaders can really help with that. So a leader who's attentive and understands, hey, this is, here are your career goals, and willing to kind of challenge and stretch the person and say, hey, go work on this other thing because I know it's in alignment with what you want to do, can really help with that. The other thing that we see is leaders who are willing to advocate for the organization tend to have more engaged employees reporting to them. So leader-driven experience also means that we are not just wrapping our arms and protecting people from the big bad organization that's out there making our lives miserable. It's helping them see how they belong in this organization and the positive things that the organization does, and to help to explain some difficult decisions that are making in a way that can make sense to employees. A lot of that is on the leader, and a lot of that has impact on whether or not somebody's going to stay there and engage in the organization.
Yeah, those are really good points. And I'll add, what we're seeing in our data lately, as we look at the responses to employee surveys from leaders, their perceptions around workload and stress are lower compared to the individual contributors. In other words, they're carrying a heavier load, they're busier, more stressed. And so, and that's especially with frontline leaders. And so in order for them to fulfill these bullet points here, they need support. They need to also, you know, if they're too busy to do any of this stuff, they're not going to, you're not going to create an engaged workforce. So you got to support them and give them the, enable them more.
Right.
Okay. So last topic here around culture, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. So belonging is now, well, I shouldn't say is now, is really an important part of this whole idea of culture, diversity, equity, and inclusion. We measure, you know, several different questions on this topic. I feel like I belong here is probably the most important one on this list. And it's holding steady as we look at our data year over year, 78% agreement on that particular topic. Comfortable in the culture, we saw a spike. It was interesting, 82% agreement on that statement, and it dipped a little bit to 78% this past year. We've begun asking this question more. I can be myself at work. So we didn't have enough data in 2020. Past 2 years, it's doing well. So most people agreeing with this statement about being myself. And the care question took a little bit of a dip. So do I feel the organization cares about them? 76% agreement compared to 78%.
And that's so, one of those that takes a dip usually when you have a layoff.
Right.
So you have I'll be interested to see with the organizations that we're working with as they have layoffs to see what happens to that in 2023.
And then how are we measuring DEI? So we're trying to get a feel for both, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. The top one kind of touching on the diverse workforce. That's kind of holding steady year over year as we're measuring this. Being treated equally or equitably, 85%. So, you know, more agreement on this statement overall in the organization, although there are differences by gender and ethnicity when we look at specific organization. So this does play out differently comparatively. And then, you know, again, we're asking this inclusive environment question more frequently. We saw a dip in 2022, a pretty significant one in our global benchmark. And so we're trending on that to see what's going on there. Is that, you know, is that trending also with belonging a bit around feeling included in the organization? And so a couple of questions here we're interested in seeing. So when we started measuring this back in 2020, very few organizations were really doing much or, you know, had training or had many initiatives around diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now we're seeing more organizations, they have an effort, they have a, you know, employee resource group, they have a committee, whatever. And so we're trying to get a beat on, are we seeing it make a difference? Here's a couple of questions you can add to your surveys going forward to see if our efforts are really paying off and making a difference overall on the culture of the organization. For the most part, when we ask these questions, we are seeing it. We see it in the comments of surveys where people really appreciate the changes and improvements, but it does take a lot of work and effort. And hence, here's some kind of best practices we'll share with you in terms of what we're seeing other organizations do to kind of promote diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now, a lot of organizations we work with, they have a diversity person and they are running a really good program and have a lot of initiatives going in. As we're doing employee surveys, we're just asking a few questions, kind of taking a light measurement on some of these topics. Other organizations, we're helping them do a pulse survey, very specific to a lot of topics around diversity, equity, and inclusion. So you can kind of, you know, typically we say, yeah, let's include it on your employee survey so we get a bead on this. And then that gives us some data to then run with the committee or your diversity person to plan initiatives. These topics, you know, typically we say start off, what kind of diversity do you need? It is different by organization, your location. Again, a lot of our, you know, US-based organizations are very interested in this, but it differs across when you get outside to your international locations in terms of how it's defined and used. Of course, there's training, you know, ERGs, a couple things here, you know, iteration. You're not going to solve it with your first, you know, your first launch out of the chute. So you're going to need to iterate, try different things, see how they work out. The conversations that emerge from your efforts are really what we see as having an impact because it gets people talking. It keeps it front of mind. We're trying to, again, change perceptions in a lot of cases and change the culture and then keep asking and measuring. So how are we doing? Are we making progress? What's working? What's not? So we show a maze symbol here because it takes a bit to kind of navigate and it does kind of emerge as you kind of get from step to step. Dave, anything else you want to add around?
I think measuring? That bullet point around integrating it into everything that you do, rather than having kind of DEI initiatives in a vacuum.
Yeah.
We think about when we're having hiring conversations, when we're having promotion conversations, we're thinking about how do we make sure that we're checking our biases and things like that, and making sure that people have an evaluative process that is free of those sorts of things. So not just, hey, let's do a DEI initiative or whatever it might be. It would be integrating, you know, all your best efforts into everything that you do into normal business practices, I think, is a real key here to help move the needle on this.
Yeah, and I think if I was going to say, what's the trend? The trend is that DEI is kind of here to stay. It's morphing a bit, but you know, in 2020, we might have had 20% of our clients asking questions like this on their employee survey. Now it's virtually all of them. And in fact, it's kind of embedded on our standard survey that we start with some of these DEI questions. So it's important to employees. They care about it, especially your younger employees, which make up most of the workforce now. It's an expectation. And so if they don't see effort around this topic, they're going to wonder what's going on. How come we're not, you know, on top of this? All right. So questions. So we went through a lot of data, a lot of topics here. We're running out of time. Thank you all for your feedback. But yeah, if you have other trends that you're seeing that we didn't point out here, we'd love to kind of hear about them and get your reaction. And Dave, we're going to recircle. I'm going to bring up this slide deck again at the end of the year and call you out on some of your predictions here.
Yeah.
And see how well you did.
Thank you, Charles. I was hoping that you would do that.
Right. But yeah, thanks everyone for participating. Hope to catch you on our next webinar. We do these monthly and really appreciate the participation today.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye now.